The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Okay, we are developing Yosef's character. We're trying to understand what is it that Yosef is doing. Who is Yosef? We've done this with all the major characters. And now we're trying to understand what is Yosef finishing over here? What's left undone? And we know that it says in that Yaakov wanted to, and Yaakov dwelled in the land of the sojourning of his fathers. And we learned that the Midrash says that Yaakov wanted peace, shalva. Hashem says, oh, what? It's not enough for you to have olam haba, you also want shalva, you also want tranquility in this world? Well, then I will bring the incident of Yosef. Okay? And we're not exactly sure, well, what is the relationship? What is the whole point of all that? So, it says, and these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. And it's very clear that Yosef is the completion of Yaakov. Yosef is the playing out of what Yaakov's struggle is all about. And what ultimately Yosef does is he mobilizes the resources of this world to support Torah, to support Jacob, to support the Olam Haba that Jacob has incorporated in his life, and that the physical world will serve the spiritual world. Now, Yaakov demonstrated that after his wrestling with the angel. It says that he goes to Shechem and he is complete. And he is complete. And it says, V'yachan et pnei ha'ir. And he did something for the city. And the old tradition says he built bathhouses, marketplaces, and produced some new kind of coin. And so what he demonstrated is that his success, his spiritual success, his accessing Olam Haba has significance and is supportive of Olam Hazeh. Something that we mentioned yesterday, Nietzsche would never agree to. Right? Because Nietzsche felt a holy mission to bring a clarity to people that there is no world after, there is no Olam Haba, because he felt that Olam Haba diminishes the vitality of this world. But Yaakov demonstrates now that Olam Haba is really going to be a source of blessing to this world. And that's very true. What's left to clarify is, can this world be a blessing to Olam Haba? And in a manner that's not just because I succeeded in overcoming this world, that I see it as through overcoming it, I get some kind of merit in Olam Haba, but actually utilizing Olam Hazeh, utilizing the material world. So Yaakov, he's got this fight, he's got this battle with the angel of Esav, and he succeeds in overcoming this angel. However, this angel hits him in the thigh, which the Zohar said is damaging the supporters of Torah. Right? Damaging the material wealth supporting Torah, supporting Olam Haba, supporting the spiritual. So Yaakov has succeeded in some kind of spiritual victory, and by overcoming the physical, right, which is the force of Esav, which is his blessing, the material world, he overcomes that. So he's blessed by overcoming it, and he's blessed by letting him go. Remember, the angel says, let me go. He says, I won't let you go until you bless me. So he blesses, so the angel blesses him, so he'll let him go. I have to understand that what I believe this is clarifying is that, sure, through overcoming Olam Hazeh, through overcoming the physical world, the spiritual world is blessed. But that's not the end of it all. You have to now learn how to see that this world supports the spiritual world in an ongoing way. That this world becomes a blessing to the next world. That this world enhances the next world. Yaakov demonstrated how the next world enhances this world. But what's missing is the recognition of how this world enhances the next world. That's what Yaakov did. When he finally met Esav, Esav said, let's go together. Right? This world and the next world working together, Yaakov says, you go ahead. Right? You go ahead. And he let Esav go, just like he let the angel go. That basically the idea is, what is the purpose of Olam Hazeh? What is the purpose of this world? What does it do for you in terms of the world of eternity? Right? Does it enhance the world of eternity because it offers me the possibility to overcome it? Or is there another level that now that I've overcome this world, can I use in a way that it supports the next world? It supports the next world. Do you follow this? Because these are two approaches in this world. Does this world offer me an opportunity in terms of the next world, an opportunity in terms of it being something that I can overcome? Or is there an even added opportunity that now that I've overcome it, can I succeed in not letting it go, but it continually serve Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba? And that is not what Yaakov succeeded in doing, but this is what Yosef's able to do. Yosef, whereas Yaakov overcomes the angel of Esav, which represents the physical world, the material world, this world, he overcomes it. And by overcoming it, it becomes a source of blessing. But now that you've overcome this world, is it being a source of blessing because you've overcome it? Or can you now see that it's a source of blessing beyond just overcoming it, but now utilizing it, directing it? In other words, now that you've succeeded in overcoming this world and giving it up, can you go to the next world, the next level, and use it. So it's one thing to say, oh, you know, I don't want cars, and I don't want, you know, I don't care about money and fame and power, because Yosef's got everything anybody would ever want in this world. He's got money, fame, power, and looks. He's got everything you would want in this world. Now there's two ways of getting to the next world, or utilizing that in terms of its meaning for the next world. One way is overcoming it. Right? Overcoming it, meaning giving it up, sacrificing it. Are you ready to sacrifice Olam Hazeh? Right? It's really quite interesting. It's really very attractive. Right? And you give it up. You overcome your yetzer for fame and money and beauty, and you give it up. Right? And that is one way that Olam Hazeh becomes a source of blessing to the next world because it was that obstacle that you succeeded in overcoming. But now there's another level. Now that you've overcome it, can you now get back into it and use it? Because the goal of Judaism is not to give up this world, but you have to learn to give it up so that you can now learn how to sanctify it and it become an ongoing source of support and enhancing Olam Haba. This is the concept that happens in Pesach, you should know. Because it says, you know, there's a basic idea that what is the way of Torah? On the ground you shall sleep, water and bread you shall eat. So I say, oh, that's the way of Torah, right? But yeah, we see in many places in Judaism, the Torah sanctifies, sees the beauty in this world, sees the possibilities, the opportunities, right? And that's the idea of Pesach, that we have this dessert. And the whole Pesach service is based on being like a king, people pouring for you, and you're eating like a feast. Now how do you put those two together in Judaism? See, the way of Torah is, if you can give up the world, then you can have it. Only the person who can give it up will succeed in having it rather than being had by it. Only such a person can then control it and use it, mobilize it, to serve as a support for the Torah ideals, for your spiritual ideals. It's very clear how the spiritual realm can enhance the physical. But are you able to see that the physical realm can enhance the spiritual realm, not only through being able to overcome it in the name of spirituality, but now that you've succeeded in overcoming it, can you now go back into it and use it? Right? This is Yosef. So, really, whereas Yaakov succeeded in using the art of Esav to undermine Esav, to overcome Esav, it is Yosef who completes that process by using the art of Esav right? To continue to support and to enhance the next world, the spiritual values. Do you follow me? Right? But this is the finale that Yaakov succeeded in doing by overcoming the physical world. Right? Now that you've overcome it, and its alluring quality, right? Use the physical world against itself. Now can you use the physical world in a supportive way to get you even higher? And this is what Yosef does. Right? This is what Yosef does. See, Yosef, when you think of it, is the connection between religion and nationalism. And Yosef is right there. He's the last character as we move from Bereishit into Shemot. As we move from a family of a religion, of a covenant, of individuals who are holy, into going into Egypt and coming out as a nation. This is what Yosef is all about. He goes into Egypt to learn how to be a nation. He goes into Egypt to learn the art of nationalism, politics, economics. Right? He's right in there. Agriculture. I mean, he knows the whole thing. And so really, really, Yosef is the connection between Yaakov and Klal Yisrael. Yaakov and Am Yisrael. And that's really how it goes in the Sefirot. There's Yaakov, there's Yosef, and then there's Knesset Yisrael, the nation of Israel. He is the transition. Right? He's able to take that and translate it into a national vision. Now this explains also what we learned about what Yaakov wants. It says that Yaakov rested in the Holy Land. And that means, the Midrash says that he wanted tranquility in this world, and God says, what? It's not enough for you tranquility, next week you also want tranquility in this world? This is the difference between religion and nationalism. Because religion wants to be tranquil in this world by being removed from the strife and the struggle that this world presents. Oh, we meditate, we learn Torah, we do mitzvahs, what does it do with politics? We don't want to get into the struggles. So you understand that really Yaakov is still removed from this world. He wants tranquility in this world, which is, means to be removed from this world. Right? It's Yosef that brings Yaakov back into the world. As the Midrash says, that Yaakov gets into Egypt because of Yosef. Just as a mother cow follows her calf, so too Yaakov follows Yosef. Right? That it is Yosef who brings Yaakov into the world once again. If it wouldn't have been Yosef, then Yaakov would have remained a religion. He overcomes the physical world. That's religion, right? You overcome it. The material world, now you got a little spirituality. Wonderful. And that's not the end. Now you've got to come into the world. And that is the bridge. Yosef is the bridge of Judaism that bridges religion and nationalism. Because Judaism is more than a religion, and it's more than nationalism. Right? It is Yosef that is the bridge, the connection between a holy religious family, a holy religious individual, into the challenge of being a holy religious nation. Because nationalism brings you into the thick of Olam Hazeh. You know, you can be religious, you can be on your mountain, you know, you don't read the newspaper, you don't care about what's going on in the world. Politics, economics, what's that have to do with me? I pray, I learn, I do mitzvahs. This is not Jewish, this is what Yaakov still wanted. I've overcome Esau. Right? It's not enough to overcome Esau. Now you've got to get into what Esau's blessings were and utilize them in a holy way. Put them back in the context of Hashem's life. And that is how Yosef plays out what Yaakov begins. Whereas Yaakov overcomes this world, Yosef, based on that ability to overcome the world, now goes the next step and uses this world for Kedusha. Whereas Yaakov overcomes this world in the name of Kedusha, Yosef is now able to use this world in the name of Kedusha. This is, by going deeper down, he's actually ascending to an even higher place. And demonstrating God's oneness that includes even everything of this world. So whereas a religion can be something which is removed from this world, you can be in this world, but you want tranquility in this world, God says, sorry, right? You won't get tranquility in this world. You have to get involved with the struggles of this world. You have to draw into this world. Okay, and this is what Yosef succeeds in doing. He takes all the talents of this world, economics, politics, everything, and he uses it all l'shem Shemayim. Right? It becomes an opportunity not only through overcoming it, but now that you've overcome it, can you use it? Right. And this is an even higher tikkun. This raises even more sparks out of Olam Hazeh. Okay. So, Yaakov would never have made it into Egypt. And the Jewish people would never have become a nation because the Jewish people became a nation in Egypt. Right. Therefore, it is Yosef that takes Judaism from a religion and brings the religion back into this world and translates it into now becoming a holy nation with all the national kinds of responsibilities.
And it's the first time that we see this duality of responsibility and attention and all that. When we've had the Jewish people around for a while, it's the first time we see the national aspect.
Sure, I mean, he's becoming a king. I mean, basically, Yosef becomes functionally the king of Egypt, doing everything a king would do, and he's wearing kingly clothing, he's even got a non-Jewish name. He's right in there, right, in the world that one would think belongs to the Goyim, right? Ah, the Goyim can do that, the Jews, now we don't do that. He goes right in there, and he is able to utilize that, redirect it, and see how it will enhance the values of the Jewish people, right? And the values of Jewish people are not enhanced by Olam Hazeh, by overcoming it only. But now that you've overcome it, there's an even higher level, using it, redirecting it. And then you even suck out its Kedusha even more. Right? It serves God not only through being an opportunity to overcome, but now it serves God in an even more direct way. But you can only do that if you were able to overcome it. Right? Only person who can let go of Olam Hazeh and have it in a way that it will not only disturb their Olam Haba, but enhance it. Now, and this is really where Yosef is coming from.
Why couldn't we become a nation where Yaakov was?
Because he wanted Shalom. He was in the land of Israel. He thought Tchias HaMetim was going to be there. And he's not a nation. And he's just a man with some very nice children, and they all study Torah, and they're all very into values. And he said, well, so now let me stay in the land of Israel. You want to stay there, right? No, you can't be in the land of Israel as a holy family. You're returning to the land of Israel as a demonstration that you can be a holy nation. So he was on the finish. He thought he was.
Where, huh? I mean, all the people came from his children. No, I mean, the nation came from his children.
Yeah, but it was only in Egypt that they even were called a nation. The king of Egypt says, this nation is a threat. An amazing idea that it's the king that recognizes they're a nation. They go, what, we're a nation? What are you talking about? Yes, they're a military threat. We're a military threat. We're just a family, just a religion. Right? That has been the ongoing conflict the Jewish people have had throughout the history of Galus. Right? Are you a religion or are you a nation? Right? What are you? Right? And we're trying to pick. And our answer is we're not going to pick. We believe that nationhood and religion are one. Right? And that you don't leave what's to God is God, what's to Caesar's is Caesar's. But even what's to Caesar's is to God. Right? And even the political arena, even the economical arena, is something that has to do with Torah. And is a function of Torah, and it will enhance Torah. Right? And it will ultimately demonstrate Hashem's oneness on the highest level. So, this is Yosef. Yosef brings Am Yisrael out of Eretz Yisrael from a position of being a holy family and knocks him into Egypt. He takes Yaakov, who wanted to be tranquil in this world, which means to be removed from the struggles of this world, and he brings Yaakov back into this world. You're not finished. You're not finished with this world after you've overcome it. Now you got to learn to use it. And this is Yosef's strength. He now learns how to use all those resources of the material world in a way that will enhance Torah, support Olam Haba. Right? Okay. So, the brothers do not like Yosef. And why don't they like Yosef? We explain because they're not sure whether Yosef is not a tyrant or perhaps he is a king. Because the difference between a tyrant and a king is a tyrant is another individual who conflicts and undermines your individuality. He doesn't represent you, right? But a king represents the people. The king speaks in the Holy Week. The king is seen as a representative of the people, reflecting their aspirations. And the service to the king is self-fulfilling because they recognize that the king is actually in service of them. Right? And that's the understanding of what a king is. The individuals are subservient to the king because he represents the klal where in which they will find their meaning and direction. And the king is actually in service to the people. And there's some kind of mutual inclusiveness going on. They serve him and he serves them. Right? They see themselves within him and he sees themselves within them. That's a king. Right? That's a king. Where the individual includes the klal, and the klal is seen as including that particular individual, and they reflect each other. But they're not sure about that, because the way this kid is talking, he's 17 years old, and he's talking about them bowing down to him. First, he's a sheaf. Okay, it's the physical world. But now he's like somewhere in the celestial world, and even the suns. And so they really get very nervous, and they judge him. And basically, it's accepted that they judged him, they convened as a bestin, and they consider him as a marid b'malchut, which is a rebellion, a rebel against the kingdom. Because they saw this individual charismatic leader as a conflict to what they were all about. And it's very possible that what they thought was going to happen from now on was a government situation. All the brothers together would create some kind of government. Right. And I think this is a conflict, this suggests a conflict between the idea of king or government. Because they see themselves as a unit. And so they go to Shechem, and it says that they went to Shechem to watch their sheep. In verse 12, chapter 37, it says, V'yelchu achiv lirot et son aviyim b'shechem. Now Hirsch says something very interesting. He says, why you have these two dots over the word et? So he says, and I believe he's basing it on a midrash, he says that they really didn't go to Shechem to go watch their sheep. They went to Shechem to get away from Yosef. Because they felt that Yosef was undermining them, and they went to him to free themselves so that they can be independent of him. Now, they were frightened of this little guy. And they went to Shechem, and of course, what is Shechem? What is the last thing we saw about Shechem? It was the place where Dina was raped, and you saw an incredible unity, a fraternal unity, right? Where the brothers got together and decided, hey, we work like a group, right? So they went to Shechem, which is that place that again reminded them of the strength that they could run on Israel as a government, right? To get away from this tyrant, charismatic kid in their eyes, who's only coming to undermine the Malchus of Israel. Right? And so they judge him as a tyrant, as a rebel, and they send him and they sell him off. Okay? Now it's very interesting because it hit me this morning, something that had been bothering me for years. You know, what just happens just before this Parsha? You have the enumeration of all the kings of Edom, all the kings of Esau. And there's something that I never could understand, and I think this is the beginning of its understanding. If you look back at chapter 36, verse 31, it says, Ve'elah ha-malachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom. And these are the kings that ruled in the land of Edom, lifnei melach melech, before a king, one king, was established as a king, melach melech, lifnei Yisrael, to the sons of Israel. Now you have to understand this whole piece over here. In Jewish mysticism, hints to the famous Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. And the Ari, on this very place, which I never could understand, of all places, to say, and this is the hint to the breaking of the vessels. Right? And all the various names of these kings, Bela ben Ba'or, and Yovav, the Ari shows is connected to the Sefirot, the seven Sefirot that come into the world, and each one wanted the light and broke. I can never say, what's going on? But I believe it's now becoming very clear. You see, the breaking of the vessels in Kabbalah is based on the world of Nikudim, the world of points. Each vessel came out completely independent of the other vessels. And each vessel wanted all the light, but broke. The kings, plural, who wanted to rule Edom, they came out first before the fixing, which will be the king of the Jewish people. In other words, what you have over there is really Yosef is the fixing of what was just mentioned in the last parsha. Because Yosef is going to take king position, but not a tyrant, not as a point, that is in conflict with all the other points, as they struggle for who will take all the life. But the world of the fixing is called the world of Gerudim, where each particular includes and mirrors all the other vessels. And only in the merit of that ability can he receive the light. Now it's interesting, because there are three worlds in Judaism. There's the world of points, which are all these particular egotistical vessels that see themselves as self-defined, self-contained, self-sufficient, without any relation to all the other vessels and want all the light, and that breaks down, and that, the Ari says, is talking, that's what this is talking about. And then you have this other world, which is called the world of Akudim, which is a world that wanted the individual to be surrendered to the whole, like a government type of thing, where all the individuals are within the whole. There's not one individual, but all the individuals can only be within the whole. Right? So the world of Akudim was one vessel that included all ten. But the ideal in Judaism is called the world of Berudim, which is the unification of the world of points and the world of Akudim, the world of complete unity. Right? And this is really what Yosef is all about. Because Yosef is the fixing. He is going to be that individual who is able to represent and include the klal, include the whole, while seeing the whole still including him. He's the one that's able to recognize how the whole serves him, because that's the way he can serve them. And so this is really a very important point over here, that Yosef comes right after that, because what we just learned about is those kings of Edom, and what are the brothers afraid of? They're afraid that Yosef is like those kings of Edom, tyrants, individuals who have the nation serving them out of their own interest, for their self-interest. And that's what the Ari says. The Ari says that they thought that Yosef was the remnant of the klipa of Esav and Yishmael. Right? That he is selfishness. And that Yaakov still had one son that was that tyrant, which was that vessel that causes the breaking in the world, is that person who sees himself as an individual in conflict with the whole. Right? And they are the whole, he's the individual, and they cannot get together. They cannot see how the individual could include the whole and how the whole could include the individual. They can't see that yet. Right? So they opt, in contrast to what they saw of these alufim, these kings, these mighty kings, these selfish kings of Edom, they saw themselves as an antidote by becoming some unified government. Right? And they saw Yosef representing that same phenomena of Edom and the kings of Edom. Right? And so they saw him as a real threat. Right. Okay, so they send Yosef away, they judge him, and he finds himself in the house of Potiphar. Yeah.
Why did Yaakov send Yosef to see the brothers?
So they say that the reason why he did it is he really thought that they were in the world of Tikkun. He really thought that Trias HaMetim is just around the corner, and all that has to be done is for the brothers and Yosef to come to some kind of shalom. And that's why he says, go see what the shalom of your brothers is. Because he really thought that this was it. He thought it was time. Right, here I am in Eretz Yisrael, I'm tranquil. And all that's left is I see there's difficulties amongst the brothers. I'll send Yosef over there and they'll work it out. Right? We just got to work it out. I'm sure when they see him and he talks to them. They'll see his mesirat nefesh, because even though he knows they hate him, he, out of such mesirat nefesh, he listens to his father and goes to see how they're doing. Right? So he really thought this was it. He thought he could bring together, unite Yosef and all the other brothers. Right? Because Yosef is the keystone of all the other brothers. He's the multicolored man who includes all the brothers. He's an individual, and yet an individual that includes the collective, and the collective would appreciate how they include that individual and how they feed off each other. He thought they could do that. But it wasn't fine. Yeah.
So when they were all together, it would be much better for like Abba is there, and Abba can say to all the kids, this is your favorite, this is what he represents, he's not a threat to you, and he's not a threat to
you. All I can say is perhaps that would minimize the ultimate tikkun. When you got your father there, and he said, no, come on, but I think he, I'm going to say that's what they say, that he thought it was Tchiasa Meitim time, and that he really thought this was it, and all that was left is to bring that shalom between the brothers, and they would recognize their respective powers, and how they include each other, how they serve each other, right, how they benefit each other. He thought that was it. It wasn't it yet. There was still something left. What was left is Yosef still has not utilized the blessings of Esau. Right? Yosef still has to take Yaakov back into Olam Hazeh. He's overcome Olam Hazeh. He's in Olam Haba. He's Shalem. He's in Shabbos. And he's seeing and he's sending back gifts to the Olam Hazeh. But he's not finished yet. Right? There's still something that needs to be finished over here.
What is Shabbos?
The revival of the dead, which is like the ultimate, Okay, so now we have Yosef in the house of Potiphar, and it's really quite amazing. It says about Yehuda that he had some kind of drop, some kind of fall. Right, and then we get into this whole story about Yehuda. They have to appreciate that Yosef is the root of the Mashiach ben Yosef, and Yehuda is the root of Mashiach ben David. Right? Yosef is coming from the family of Rachel, and Yehuda is coming from Leah. And it's from Leah that the Mashiach ben David comes into the world, and it's from Rachel that the Mashiach ben Yosef comes into the world. And therefore it's no accident that these two stories are intertwined, because these two stories are in fact both the roots of these two Mashiachs. Yehuda and Tamar are the beginning of the ongoing story as we cultivate the world towards Mashiach, the two Mashiachs. And the Mashiach ben Yosef is the nationalistic Mashiach. And the Mashiach ben David is the universal Mashiach. And to a certain extent, the Mashiach ben Yosef is the redemption of the physical world. And the Mashiach ben David is the redemption of the spiritual world. And they're meeting because they have to work together. And it says that why are these two stories juxtaposed? Because Tamar did it l'shem shemayim. What she did as dressing herself up so he would lie with her, the oral tradition says she did it in the name of Hashem to bring Mashiach into the world. She prophetically understood that she could do that, and she wanted to do that. Right? And so too, Potiphar's wife, who's trying to seduce Yosef, is doing it l'shem shemayim. She's doing it for the sake of shemayim. For the sake of Hashem. Why? Because it says that she astrologically saw that through her would come Mashiach ben Yosef. That's what it says. But she wasn't sure if it was her or her daughter. It turns out it was her daughter. Right. And she really was seducing Yosef, not Stam, but L'shem Shemayim. This is what the oral tradition says. So we see over here the beginnings of the two Mashiachs as they are playing, as the roots are becoming planted for the beginning of some greater historical process. So Yosef is in the house of Potiphar, and what is the unique quality that Yosef has? What do you see a number of times? If you read the verses carefully, you would see something a number of times being mentioned. God's name. It's unbelievable. Verse 2, chapter 39, verse 2. It says, and Yudkei Vavkei was with Yosef, and he became a very successful person in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And the master saw that Yudkei Vavkei was with him, and all that he did, Yudkei Vavkei brought success to him. And Yosef found favor in his eyes, And basically, Potiphar makes Yosef the head of his house, controlling his house, organizing his house, and giving him complete reign. Something that we see happen three times with Yosef. It happens in Potiphar's house. It happens when he sends him to jail again, and the head of the jail again likes Yosef. Yosef finds favor in his eyes, and right away he's controlling the jail. And then when he finally gets thrown, he gets taken out of the jail, and he's in Pharaoh's house. Pharaoh says, "Oh, I like you, right? And I'll make you in control of the state." Three times the same thing happens to Yosef. Right? That he's somebody that people trust, and he's somebody that they see can control and direct the house. Now, isn't that interesting? Because it's something that his brothers couldn't see. Because these people put him up in this position of leadership, but they see him representing their needs so much so they're willing to trust him completely. Because whatever you do, I know, is in my best interest. So this is, of course, the challenge over here. This is the struggle over here. Is Yosef the kind of person who represents the klal and does it in their best interest as a servant of them? Or does he become this haughty leader who does it selfishly? Right? This is his own struggle, that he has to work it out. So now what happens? So it says, why do you have this name Hashem all the time? And how, of course, does this Egyptian, this idol worshiper, see that Yosef is in touch with Hashem all the time? So the Midrash says, he asks Yosef, why don't you murmur all the time? So Yosef says, oh, whenever I do something, I pray to Hashem that he should help me. And whenever it comes out, I thank Hashem that he helped me. Basically, Yosef, in the house of Pharaoh, was always saying, Baruch Hashem, Yitz Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Yitz Hashem. And every time he said, could you do this for me, Yosef? Yes, Baruch Hashem. And Yitz Hashem? And I said, oh, that was great work, Yosef. Said, oh, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. And I said, what are you murmuring all the time? So he saw that the name of Hashem was on his lips the whole time. And this gave him trust. And he said, you can be the controller. I know whatever you'll do will be in my best interests. I see that you represent me. Right? It's kind of an amazing thing that Yosef has this talent to do. But of course, this is all part of his midah. Okay? This is all part of his midah. And also, it's interesting to note, and you read really carefully, isn't it a little strange that the whole story about how the brothers judge him, Yosef doesn't say a word? I mean, you'd expect a couple words like, hey, don't do this to me. Hey, brother, don't do this. And of course, the oral tradition does put words in his mouth. I mean, it does record things that he says. But if the written tradition doesn't say anything, that is something we have to notice. And I think maybe that itself is an indication that Yosef recognizes that he went about it all wrong. Right? And that the way he went about introducing himself and trying to get them to understand his unique power, that he's an individual that includes all of them, but he's not doing it in any haughty, selfish way, it's very possible that when they judged him and he didn't say a word, that he recognized why they perceived that and there's really nothing to say, and he'll just have to accept the punishment. Right? That he still wasn't doing it with the purity of L'shem Shemayim, but there was still a note of self whenever he told them about his dreams. And so it would make sense then that all of a sudden we see Yosef with Hashem, 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 Hashem. But what's that name? It's the name of surrender. Right? It's the name that he needs in order to effectualize a tikkun on himself. That maybe prematurely I was recognizing the name Elohim a little too fast. Without really, and here I am, a servant, a slave. And of course, this is how God cultivates the Jewish people. How does God cultivate a king? How does God cultivate a leader? By making him into a servant. Only someone who knows what it means to be a servant knows what it means to be a king who serves the people, rather than sees the people serving his own interests. And therefore, this is all God's cultivating Am Yisrael and their position in the world, because Melech Mashiach and the Jewish people represent Malchus in the world. They have to do it as a sense of receiving in order to give. That's the only reason you're allowed to receive all this kavod, all this honor, is because you're going to give it over. Right? So a king receives in order to give. And they saw Yosef just wanting to receive in order to have. Not in order to give. Not in order to be. In a relationship with them, in a relationship with Hashem, and effectualize their relationship with Hashem. This is the test. And the oral tradition says that Hashem was preparing Am Yisrael to understand what it means to be poor and to be able to overcome the test of being poor, and then God is cultivating Israel to overcome the test of being rich. Right? Which is what happens to him. He becomes successful, he becomes powerful, and sure enough, here comes the big test. After everyone put their trust in you, after this man sees in you that you represent him, right, and would do anything only in his best interests, and that you, in this leadership position, are actually a servant, he gives him complete rein. Now comes the man's wife and says, lie with me. Lie with me. And of course, what does Yosef say? He says, no! You know, I can't, I mean, your husband has entrusted me with everything. I mean, everything's in my hands, but you, I mean, you're his wife. I couldn't do that to him. This is the test. Are what you're doing in his best interest, or has it begun to affect you in a selfish way? Right? And this is his big test. Is he l'shem shemayim? Does he do it as a faithful servant or not? Or does he begin to take it personally, and does he begin to abuse the powers? And you have to understand, what a test. First of all, he's not very old. 17-year-old. Right? And second of all, he's in a place which sexual perversion is pastime for them. I mean, Egypt was known to be one of the most sexually perverted places in the world. So you imagine, you know, you're young, you're not with your father or your family, right? And not only that, you're all alone. Nobody's going to see you. Nobody's going to even see you, and you could get away with it. You could get away with it. I mean, could you imagine this? I mean, who could do that? It's unbelievable when you think of it. You know? That's when your yetzer gets you the most. You're young, so you have all those sexual drives, you got all this power, your family's not around giving you this religious trip, right? You're enjoying yourself in the center of Manhattan, you're in a discotheque, nobody knows who you are, and you could do it, no one ever even know, except... you know who? This is amazing. And not only that, the Midrash says that she not only for a year tried to seduce him. Every single day, it says. It says every day. She was a yom v'yom. Right? In verse 10, she spoke to him every day, saying, lie with me, be with me. I mean, for a year yet. Every single day, the guy's working in this house and he's got complete reign. The master doesn't even know what he does, doesn't care, because he knows whatever he'll do, a complete trust in him. And everything he'll do is in my best interest. Every single day, this lady seducing him. The old tradition said she would change her clothing. Right? She would wear different clothing in the morning, different clothing at night. She would try and do everything. Right? Dressing herself up in a million ways to try and get him. And the guy still doesn't do it. And then the old tradition says not only did she do that, she threatened him. She threatened him, said, if you don't, then, oh boy, you don't know what I'll do to you. Right? She really went all, and he still doesn't do it. But then, as it says in verse 11, right, it's interesting though, because he all of a sudden uses the name Elohim in verse 9. He says, well, there's no one in the house as big as me, right? And your husband hasn't left anything that's not in my power except you. And how can I do this evilness and sin against Elohim? Now the whole time he'd been using the name Yud-Kefav, okay? And now he's sinning against Elohim, but of course, before he was a servant, now he's a king. Now he's beginning to taste that Elohim-like quality of in control, power. Now you recognize Elohim in that choice, that ability to determine, to handle, to manipulate. He's in the position of Esav once again. And he says, could I sin against Elohim? Well, I abuse that power that's invested in me because God's an Elohim and sin against Elohim by not maintaining my recognition of Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. You see the tikkun happening once again. Can you have that sense of power and yet in a state of surrender? Can you do what you do l'shem shemayim? Unbelievable. And so she's seducing him every single day. And it says in verse 11, V'yib kayam hazeh v'yava baita lasot melato. And so Yosef came to do his malacha, to do his thing. And in the Gemara Sota, there's a difference of opinion. What exactly what was he doing going back there on his own that day? And nobody's home, and you don't go back there when nobody's home. You know what it's been like for a year.
National fair going on.
Right, right. Everybody was out. There was a kind of national fair going on, and he went in there. Actually, it says, Halchu kulam lebeit avodat kochavim. Everyone was davening, you know, in the house of idol worship. He knew nobody was home. So you don't go back there when nobody's home. So one opinion says, no, he really did it. He really went to do some kind of work. Another opinion says, no, he went in order to lie with her. That was it. He couldn't deal with it anymore. Right? And he went to do some his tzarchav, what he wanted to do, his own needs, his own selfish needs. And he went back there to do that. Right? And nobody's in the house. The Zohar says there's nobody from the people of the house, which is very interesting. Vein ish mi anshei habayit sham b'bayit. So the really strange thing to say, there's nobody there who's from the house, which means that someone else was there that wasn't from the house. And the Zohar says, you know who? Yaakov. That Yosef saw his father's face all of a sudden. Right? All of a sudden it comes back. And what is Yaakov? Yaakov is the root of Yosef. Yaakov is Tiferet. Yaakov is Yiduat L'Shem Shemayim. Yaakov is truth, honesty, completion. And he was about to do it, and she grabbed him, and he left his clothing in her hand, and he ran outside, v'yetzei achutza, and he went out. So he says, v'yanas, and he escaped, v'yetzei achutza, and he went out. What's going on over here? He went out? The Midrash says, because of Yosef, the sea split for the Jewish people. Why? Because as it says in Tehillim, and the sea saw v'yanas, and it escaped, it ran away, relating to the v'yanas. And the Midrash says, v'yetzei achutza, who's the last time that was yotzei achutza? Abraham. Remember it says, when God took him outside, v'yetzei achutza, the same words? Yosef transcends, again, his physical nature. The Midrash says that Yosef said, maybe it's a Zohar that says, Yosef said, well, you tested all my fathers, my grandfather, my father, you're not testing me. God said, oh, you're going to get the biggest test. Right? This is it. What a test. Right? He's so young, he's so powerful, nobody's there, but he sees the attribute of Yaakov, and he escapes. Now there's a very amazing shot by the Bear Moshe, which is probably one of the most important understandings of this, because he proves that really what was going on over here is not just some kind of physical thing, you know, sexual attraction game going on over here. But as the Midrash says that she was doing it L'Shem Shemayim, of course he must have known that. I'm sure after every single day she said, come on, we can bring Mashiach now. You know, we want Mashiach now. Every day she was saying, come on, L'Shem Shemayim, you and I could do and bring into the world, we could bring the Tikkun, come on, lie with me, be with me. And the truth is that maybe this is a big mitzvah. And what about, you will ask, she's a married woman? So it proves that in fact the laws of B'nai Noah are such that in divorce, the woman could decide like that she wants to be divorced, and she's divorced in the laws of B'nai Noah. So therefore, she would not have been a married woman, right? She would not be considered a married woman, so he'd not be doing an Aveira. So she could divorce herself, and they would do a mitzvah. But, of course, it's a suffix mitzvah. Because she's not completely sure that it's her or it's her daughter. But it could be a mitzvah also. You can imagine that's even a greater challenge. It's one thing when you're able to run away from a beira, but when you can make it into a mitzvah. When you have a possibility that there will not be an beira whatsoever, so no matter what he would have done, it would not be an beira. It wouldn't really technically be an beira. And it's even possibly a mitzvah. And he saw the attribute because they're going to bring Mashiach.
Why is she married to bring Mashiach?
She knows that she sees astrologically, Midrash says, that she's going to be part of bringing Mashiach in the world. But she wasn't sure if that meant because her daughter was going to marry him or she was going to marry him. And so being that the Suffolk, right, and we want to do everything for Mashiach now, right? So she says, come on, and it won't be an Aveira, and it's possibly the biggest mitzvah that's going around in town. So you can imagine that's an even greater test. That he's actually going to do something, it's not a transgression, and it's even possibly a mitzvah, so then what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it is, there's still an iota of selfishness. Can I do that completely l'shem Shemayim? That's when he saw his father's face, who does everything l'shem Shemayim. As the Zohar said, Yaakov said, anything I ever did was for you, God. Now, am I doing it, or is it going to be one iota, one little element of self, and pleasure for self? And that's when he really, that's the highest level. Alright, that is the highest level. And this, I believe, is really very much connected to the idea that you shall be like God, knowers of good and evil, which is connected to the oral tradition, connected to the Rabbanim, connected to the ability that you posek halacha. And so here he is, he's a posek. Right, he's got to make a halakhic decision over here. And what he says will be good or bad because he's the halakhic posek over here. And even that he does completely l'shem Shemayim. He says, how could I sin against Elohim? Abuse the implications of Elohim as me being in such a position of power and decision and judgment when there could be an iota of selfishness and a damage. My recognition of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, and he really transcends himself in the ultimate way. So it says, the Zohar says that it was at this point he was called a tzaddik. Right? Because he guarded the covenant of Abraham. He guided the covenant of Abraham. Very interesting idea. It says that Yosef gets an extra hay also. And we find it in Tehillim. He's called Yehosef. Have you ever seen that? Yehosef. Yeah, he actually gets an added name. An added hay in his name, just like his great-grandfather Abraham in the Zohar says that he got a letter of Hashem's name. Hashem gave him a letter in his name. Because Yosef is pure relationship. Right? This is his quality. He does it purely in the relationship to Hashem. And the Rambam brings down that in fact, this is the ultimate way in serving Hashem. The Rambam says in Hilchot Yisodei Torah, chapter 5, halacha 10, all who keep themselves away from Neveira or do a mitzvah, not for anything of this world, not from fear, and not from threat, and is not asking for any honor, rather he's doing it because of the Creator, just like Yosef HaTzadik did, when he refrained from lying with his master's wife, such a person is Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. Such a person sanctifies the name of Hashem. It is that person who lives out of pure, there's no, the only reason I did this mitzvah, and the only reason I'm not going to do that Aveira, is for God. I'm not afraid. And even over here, it's even more so. Because he's not afraid. He doesn't think it's an Aveira either. He can get away with it not being an Aveira. And no one's going to see him. He's going to get away with it. And yet, what does he succeed in doing? Right. He does it completely, completely l'shem Shamayim. Right? He becomes the tzaddik. He fulfills. He guards the covenant. Because it was Abraham who established the covenant, which is established an identity based on a relationship with Hashem. Right? And that is the beginning of Judaism. And Yosef brings it around and he guards that covenant. Right? He guards that covenant. He too gets an extra hay in his name. So, to put it all together, what really is Yosef all about? If you look at all the pieces, it all comes together. He is what they call Yesod. He is the attribute of Yesod. Because the attribute of Yesod gathers all the upper individual sphirot and he holds it all together and translates it and gives it over to the lower sphirot. So we notice that Yosef's name comes from the word Asaf, which means to gather. We also see that Yosef has this multicolored coat, which is including the colors of his brothers. We see that Yosef is connected to the challenge of keeping peace, and he ultimately brings peace into the world between himself and the brothers. And we see that Yosef has this quality of being an organizer. Right? And what is an organizer? An organizer has to bring all the various parts and put it together so that they can become an organic whole. And this again is his ability. And we see by Yosef that they find chen. He finds chen in their eyes. What do you think chen is? Right? What do you think chen is? Chen is a beauty. But what kind of beauty? It's a beauty that one sees through relationship. And I think it's a beauty seen through relationship because you see yourself in that other person. You see that attraction. What's that attraction? Why are you attracted to that person? Because you see that there's something about you in them. And that your relationship with them is self-fulfilling to you. And this is what he wanted to see. They saw this in him. Chaim. They see that he represents them. They see that in him there's an aspect of themselves and they're naturally drawn to him. Because they see that they'll be fulfilled by him and that he will represent them and he'll do everything in their interest. You see people like that in the world. They have some kind of attraction, some kind of magnetism. Why? Because there's an element of yourself in them. And this is what he has. He has chen. He has that ability to incorporate others within himself and do it for them. Okay? And of course, what else do we see? We see that he does things l'shem shamayim. That he does it out of pure relationship for Hashem. Right? And therefore he has chen with Hashem. Because, so to speak, there's such a direct relation between himself and God that there's an element of God within him. Right? And we see that he has the ability to interpret dreams. Right? Now what does it mean to be able to interpret dreams? It means to take all the various parts and put them all together. Same attribute. He can bring it all together. And when he did that, when he was in jail, and they saw all that's the answer. He's able to bring it together for people and represent them. Right? And this is the quality of Yosef. Right? He's that kind of a king, and everything that's happening is part of what it takes to cultivate him so that when he gets into that position of leadership, of power, and that's power in Olam Hazeh, right, he does it L'Shem Shemayim. He does it in the name of Hashem.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.